quick note before we start things off here. Just want to remind you guys one more time, dissectingthe80s.com/vote will redirect you to the voting portion of the Monkeys Fighting Robots competition. We'd love to have your vote. It takes just a second. They ask for your email, but they don't even verify it, so it doesn't take more than 2 minutes. We would really, really appreciate it. We have until Super Bowl Sunday, so this is the last week, final push for us. If you could spread the word on social media and get the votes in for us, we would really appreciate it. Welcome to Dissecting the 80s. I am Trip Leno, one half of the Mega Podcasting Powers. And with me, as always, is my tag team partner, a man with a healthy fear of both waterbeds and boiler rooms, the Macho Mandrew.
Andrew Leno.
And we are starting, I don't know about you, but my favorite month of this show.
Yeah, I think so.
Even though it's not February yet. It's our shared birth month, and it has the silliest promotion that we do on this show, but my favorite, and that is
Forbuary.
We dissect part four sequels to all sorts of terrible, terrible, terrible film franchises. And this year, we're doing something special. It is Andrew's 25th birthday this month and my 30th. So we're, to celebrate those milestones in our life, doing, well, things that have kind of been milestones for our life. 80s slasher movies. We're starting with Nightmare on Elm Street 4. We will continue with Friday the 13th Part 4, and we will end with Halloween Part 4. So,
yeah, you confused me because you were like, oh, don't forget we're going to go alphabetical order.
Oh, and I was like, okay.
I was like, okay, Friday, wait a minute. He said Nightmare was first, but he did say alphabetical order. Wait a minute. Hang on.
Alphabetically by murderer first name. It's not not the most logical way to
it's
do it.
Slasher, perhaps. Comma, alphabetical, comma, killer first name.
Well, we're kicking things off with Nightmare on Elm Street, Part 4, The Dream Master. So you know
it's
what that means.
It's usually Dream something, so. The Dream Waffle Iron.
So you know what that means.
We gotta go back. We gotta go dissect the 80s. It's your Part 4 slasher. Something's gotta be done about your Part 4 slashers.
When the Mega Powers explode.
I'm talking about the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Great Scott.
Cream of the crop. Oh, 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 yeah.
Mega Powers, yeah!
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
So, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4 is directed by Rennie Harlan, who directed Deep Blue Sea, Die Hard
2. Did he really?
Yep, and Cliffhanger. So, a real luminary of film, if we're being honest here.
Mm-hmm. I always forget. Die Hard 2 is the one in the airport?
Yes.
Okay. And Die Hard 3 is the one with Samuel L. Jackson?
Correct.
Okay.
Die Hard 2 might be the least believable film plot of all time. There are three airports that are within, like, I don't know what the exact distance, but there's the Baltimore airport and then two airports in D.C. And the premise of Die Hard 2 is, like, they can't land the plane in D.C. as if they wouldn't just fly, the half an hour to the next place and land it there. It's, like, the dumbest thing of all time. So we don't normally start off with stuff like this, but I did a little research, so I'm going to share it with all of y'all. This was a $49 million gross, which is the highest Freddy film before Freddy vs. Jason.
I saw that.
Yep, and it was written in 7 days, and I think when you watch it, you're very aware of that.
See, I think there are elements that are strong and could work. It just, I think if they had, you know, an extra 7 days, they could be like...
maybe even like a whole month, I don't know, something crazy like that.
But like, I think for 7 days, it's a solid script. Like, the what is in there, there's stuff to work with.
I don't disagree with you. There's pieces of this movie I do like, but yeah,
and then
it's
towards
nowhere.
The end, I did my thing where I rewrote the movie to be more interesting.
Okay.
So,
do you want to wait and do that later?
Yeah, I'll do that later. But there's stuff to work with in this movie. I think.
Okay.
Which was nice. Which is a shocking change.
Well, it's weird too, coming off Better Off Dead, which I enjoyed so much, to come to a movie like, oh yeah, remember, most of the time on this podcast, we're not liking the thing we're talking about. It's not just an hour and a half of me being like, hands under my chin, feet up in the air, laying on my bed, like, boy, isn't this movie dreamy? So we start with the main character of this movie, whose name is Nancy?
No, Nancy's the real one. She's Kristen. Nancy's the one from the original and the sequel.
Oh, okay.
And then they bring her back for the meta one.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's my favorite one since we talked
about the meta one is great.
Yeah. We talked about like our favorites for these movies back on one of the previous episodes that covered one of them. I don't want to rehash that same territory, but go back into the catalog. I think either the Friday the 13th 3D episode or somewhere else, we had a long discussion about our favorites of this genre and these guys, so I don't want to dig too deep there. But Kristen is walking down the street, and there's like a little girl colored in with some chalk, and she starts, you know, then suddenly it starts raining, it gets all creepy.
And then we get the classic rope skipping song that follows Freddy around, and I feel like I will always love that song.
What, like the 1, 2, Freddy?
Yeah, like it's simple. It's simple and creepy and just the right amount.
And it goes back to our point that we've made many times that like children singing is inherently creepy.
Oh, it's the worst.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is where I guess this is something you knew if you watched the third movie, which yes. I have not.
I've seen them all. I don't recall the plot.
That's though. What I should say. I've definitely seen it at some point, but not in recent history enough to be like, oh, that one. So I guess she can pull people into her dreams with her, which just feels like a dick move given the circumstances.
Right. Like the idea that your friends are safe and you put them in danger to help you out is kind of a weird hero move.
It's as though you are in shark infested waters and your friends are on a boat, like a ocean liner, safe from sharks. And you threw a life preserver up to them and pulled them in the water. Like, that's what that feels like. There's not a whole lot they can do for you.
You threw them, like, directly in the way of the shark as you swam past.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like that really hacky joke of, like, there's a bear and the one person starts tying their shoes and just like, oh, I just have to run faster than you.
Mm-hmm. So she pulls her two friends in the dream. And I thought the one friend was Freddy. Because we watched the one kid get pulled in. And we didn't see the... And then all of a sudden, there's a second kid just popping out of nowhere. And I was like, oh, Freddy. Deaf Freddy.
Yeah,
Freddy.
Absolutely. And especially because the one thing I do like about the Nightmare series is the use of dream logic is really kind of cool when they do it well. And that's the kind of move they would totally do, where he just, like, morphs into other people. And you're like, oh, shit, it was him.
Yeah, exactly. Because then he'd be like, oh, I killed him. He'd pull his shirt off, and his face would be in his chest or something like that.
Right, right, right.
So then the one kid's dog jumps out of the boiler and bites her, like, with aggressive force.
Yes.
So somehow she pulled the dog in without realizing it, which I guess agitated the dog, because she wakes up in, like, just a puddle of blood, and we see the dog's mouth looks like it just killed a rabbit.
Well, I have to feel like, I have to think that a dog dream is, like, pretty pleasant. Like, I have to imagine dogs don't have too many nightmares.
That's so. I wouldn't think so.
The dog waking up in the dream and he's in a boiler room with a psycho murderer, I feel like is a pretty tough place to be as a dog.
Okay, that's fair. I can get behind that logic.
Yeah. So, there's just like blood everywhere. It looks like a whole bunch of things.
It looks like Carrie at the prom.
Yeah, yeah. It's really dark.
And so she, we smash cut to the next day where she's like getting her friends to go to school, like driving her friends to school. And it's perfectly timed. She's in this blue outfit that looks like what Melania Trump was wearing. That, like, Beauxvallon Academy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also, like, the opening where she's, like, driving to her friend's house. She's in a convertible. It's, like, blue sky, you know, beautiful day, sunny day kind of stuff. This movie, not that most of what we watch doesn't feel this way, but this one in particular feels so instantaneously 80s to me. And it's not just the clothes and the hair, because that's everywhere, but it's like the score is really synthesizer driven, and mm-hmm. the it's slangier than a lot of stuff we watch, which I feel like helps too.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And it was like, of all the things we've watched, like, this is one of the ones I would put near the top, is like, if you put this on and we're like, all right, what year's this movie? Nearly everybody would be like, oh, that's clearly the 80s. Like, they would know within a second.
And the best part is that they didn't date the movie in any way. Like, even when they were showing people's tombstones, they covered up all of the death dates.
Yeah, which is really clever.
I was like, that's nice, better than saying, like, present day and being like, oh, it's not present day anymore.
No, it's
as soon
as
you release it, it's not present day anymore.
So she goes to her, I guess, boyfriend's house. I don't really understand what the
slam piece.
It's like clearly the two of them are doing it, but I don't know if it's like, oh, fish.
Yeah, like, and it's like her best friend's brother.
Yeah.
Starring Meryl Streep and Alec Baldwin, you might say.
And they have an alcoholic father who is, like, making a Bloody Mary on a Tuesday.
Which, okay, in his defense, sounds like a great Tuesday.
I mean, yeah, but also a pretty good way to not have a job anymore.
Yes. And his daughter goes out of the house in, like, one of those, like, ankle-length Catholic school skirts.
And she's basically like, wearing a burqa. Like, you can't see anything but her face and hands.
And he's like, you're wearing that to school? And I was like, oh, he's going to be a nightmare.
Yep, yep.
He's definitely going to turn into a nightmare.
I see what you did there.
Ah.
I see it. And so the boyfriend, like, climbs down off the little roof of the porch or entranceway to the back. You know, the back door has, like, a weird little peek over it.
Awning.
Yeah, an awning. Thank you. I couldn't get that word. He climbs down and they're, like, have a quick conversation. He's like, we got to go. Dad's clearly drunk this morning. And he opens the door and is, like, kind of doing that sway where he can't quite find his balance. And you're like, oh, man, like, they're really pouring on thick with the alcoholic dad here.
Yeah, right? It's like the mom from Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we get to school and we meet all the kids. And once again, this clique is, like, weirdly diverse.
Yeah.
And not just ethnically. I mean, it is ethnically diverse. But also it's like there's an edgy rocker chick and, like, a super nerd with asthma and the weirdo karate kid.
That's an accurate way to put him. He is the weirdo karate kid.
Yeah, it's like they saw Christian Slater in Heathers, like a picture, and they're like, that's probably the character.
Is Heathers going to be the new ghost on this podcast?
It will be. It will be.
Heathers has replaced both Ghost and She's All That as the number one reference point for you. It's all Heathers all the time.
We are only 15 minutes in. There's still time for at least 3 She's All That references. We talk about it more than Freddie Prinze Jr. does.
Oh, I'm adding him to the list of ridiculous gets for the podcast.
Oh my God, yeah.
Even though he has no 80s credits, I don't think.
I don't think so. And this is where I realized that, like, eyebrows in the 80s were super heavy. Like, the brow ridge and everything it was very like Zachary Quinto.
Yes.
Like, he would have dominated if he was an actor in this period. He would have been like the teen heartthrob.
It's all about the ridge, baby.
Yeah.
I'm imagining like a Tiger Beat spread that's just
his eyebrows.
But it's just forehead ridges, and it's like it's like a pictorial spread of like 10 guys just like from their top eyelid to their mid forehead area. Like, you can't even tell who it is, and it's just like matching the actor or the singer to their brow ridge.
That sounds like something that I would find in a teen magazine today. Like, match the eyebrows.
Who's got the fiercest brow, ladies?
Plot twist. It's all Cara Delevingne.
I also like the fact that, like, this is one of several movies in a row that we've covered where it's an ensemble-y movie, and so the quickest way to just, like, learn who everybody is to put them all in a room and have them quickly explain who they are.
Yeah.
Because, like, they get in front of the school, and it's like, okay, we've got the brother and sister with the alcoholic dad, we've got the girl with the magic powers, and then we meet the other three friends, and it's like, you know, their clothes instantaneously tell you everything you need to know about them.
Yeah, it's real one-dimensional stereotyping clothing.
Right, right. And then the one finds a roach in her little bag of chips.
Were they even chips? They looked like gooey.
I mean, maybe it wasn't chips. It looked like a little snack bag like that, though.
It was,
you know?
Yeah. It was like the Doritos multipack from Costco.
Yeah, like a little you know, 3-ounce bag of whatever. It might not have been chips, but like if you encountered a live roach in a bag of chips, I would have all of the questions.
I would be writing all of the letters and making all of the phone calls and being like, excuse me, Mr. George Dorito, I would like free Doritos for life now.
Yeah, absolutely. I would like to be heir of the Dorito fortune. Also, hey, scientists, this cockroach survived in a sealed bag for like months. It's alive.
I mean, there's a lot of food in there, I guess.
But no oxygen.
Oh, unless it did. Yeah, it would have to, assuming it didn't bite a little hole.
Instead of getting out, it just made an air hole and was like, yeah, whatever, I got snacks and it's puffy and comfortable in here.
Yeah,
dog.
Why
I'm
would
set.
You leave that? Why? That'd be like leaving a room filled with like your favorite food and just like immediate like safety and favorite food. Why would you leave?
Is this going to be the part of the podcast where you cop to just like wanting to live in a baby pool full of Cheez-Its?
Maybe not Cheez-Its. Maybe like it's probably like shredded cheese.
Did we put you in a hamster ball of shredded cheese and you're just like, whatever, I'm good. I'm set.
Instead of the wood chips at the bottom of the hamster cage, it's just shredded cheese.
We put you in like a hazmat suit so you're sanitary and you're not ruining it, and then just toss you in.
And then the water bottle's full of queso.
And most of your days are spent laying on your back with your mouth open and trying to get the shredded cheese to fall into your face.
Yep. Sounds about right.
So, we get like the weirdest Chekhovs. And I say this knowing that we've had some very weird Chekhovs on this movie. But we get Chekhov's cockroach, Chekhov's karate, and Chekhov's shitty dad all within like 3 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, because we don't get the machine yet, no.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a Chekhov's Chekhov?
You mean like Star Trek?
Star Trek or the actual playwright Chekhov.
Like a meta play that he is in?
Yeah. Like or like a movie.
I mean, I don't know. It's possible.
Let's add that to the list of things we need to include in something we write.
Just anyone named Chekhov is the Chekhov thing, like the key to it all. All right, I'm down with that. So fast forward through the school day because nothing of importance happens. And Alice goes home from school and she's made some dinner. And her alcoholic father comes home and like pulls a bag of vodka out of a paper bag. And he's like, where's my dinner? And she puts a salad in front of him. And he just starts, like, just bitching about the salad. Like, a lot of complaints about salad.
Too many complaints about a damn salad.
Well, especially a salad that somebody else made for you. Like, I don't know about you, but, like, someone wants to make me anything, I'm grateful.
I agree.
Like, someone makes me a sandwich, and I'm, like, overly grateful that they took the time to do that. That's not something you have to do.
No.
And she has this great little, like, silent rage moment where she just like imagines tearing into him, flying off the handle about him being a waste of human life, and then, you know, of course it's not real, but
I think that that happens fun. A couple times before like she gets her groove back.
Can you define what you mean by gets her groove back?
Well, she's you know what I mean, though.
I mean, kind of.
She spends the first third of the movie as this, like, greasy, stringy, mousy mess who looks like she's afraid to, like, speak for fear of hearing her own voice.
And mostly hasn't slept at all.
Yeah. Like, she just looks greasy. And there's a couple moments while she is in that, like, greasy state where you get this, like, I always akin it to Mean Girls because it's the first movie I can remember that has that extensively where there's a fantasy sequence happens and then it cuts back to reality and you're like, oh, that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it predates Mean Girls, but yes.
No, I know, but like, that's, I know what like, you mean. For yes, me, yes. That's the first movie I can remember that like really used that a lot.
Right. Yeah, but he's like the opposite of a vegan. I don't know what that is, but apparently being...
Aron Swanson?
I guess. The very idea of eating a salad is offensive to him.
And that's the moment where I was like, oh, I don't want her to die. I really don't want her to die. And because I feel like with the nightmare movies especially, you don't know who is safe.
Yeah, certainly not. Because like, Freddy is, I mean, they're all pretty much unkillable, but Freddy's unkillable in a very interesting different way than the other two. The other two are just sort of like essentially zombies that like you can't really put them down. But yeah. Freddy's ability to speak makes it different, and the dream jumping thing is certainly a different angle. So, you know, for most of these movies, a lot of people are dying.
And I think for me, like, Friday the 13th has the least amount of character development in its victims.
1,000,000%.
Like, it's just like, oh, here are 5 cardboard cutouts for Freddy to rip apart.
Jason, and, but yes.
Thank you. Fuck. Yes. Jason. And then Halloween does, but it's also like a... to me feels like a different kind of movie. Like it feels more like Jaws.
Yes, absolutely. The first one anyway.
Yeah. And then this, the Nightmare franchise feels like a combination of the two. Like you get a lot of character development, but it is just like, it's just a slasher movie.
Right, right.
But it's fun.
I find this and Friday the 13th to be much funnier than Halloween in that like I'm a sick weirdo and I find a lot of this funny.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's the same way how I used to be able to watch the Final Destination movies.
Used to be able to?
Yeah, we've talked about this. My anxiety is too bad.
Oh, well, it's funny. Oh, that's right. I do remember that. I was actually just watching the third one at the gym the other day.
Is that the roller coaster?
Yes. And so I was,
with the
I was
gym on... scene?
Yes, yes. So I was literally in the gym during the gym scene. Like, I was running on the elliptical with that scene playing. But I started – I forgot how quickly they move one, which is really what saves those movies. Because like,
they're like an hour long at most.
Yeah, and they're basically like montages of super deaths. I was watching it, and it was the scene where the two girls get fried in the suntan beds.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I always just put something mindless on in the gym. I'm listening to music anyway, and so I just wanted something on the TV, and I was like, oh, perfect, this is fun. And I was, like, watching it and laughing, and, like, not laughing hard because I've seen it a bunch of times, but, like, giggling. I'm certain people notice and think that I'm a psycho. Like, there are definitely people who go to the gym that I go to that are like, holy shit, that's the guy that was laughing while those kids died. Because I was watching it and just, like, tee-heeing to myself as, all like, you know, these two girls get fried to death in a tanning bed, and then, you know, the absurd scene in the gym where the swords swing down off the wall and cut him in half, like, cut his head off.
No, they don't even cut him in half. They cut the machine, and then he gets squished.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, his head gets smushed between the two. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Because
yeah.
He, like, ducks in
my workout, like... literally ended, like, the TV turns off when your workout ends, and so I did the whole cooldown, which I don't really do because I was wanting to see that part, and it literally, the sword swung down and the TV turned off.
Oh,
and
damn.
I couldn't get it back on in time, so I forgot how it ended. But yeah, anyway, so yes, they are funny in the way the Final Destination is funny to me.
Yeah. I also think that as an actor, the Friday, the Nightmare movies are the ones that I would have the most fun acting in.
I guess I could see that. I think I would rather die in Halloween or in Friday the 13th than Nightmare.
Why is that?
You die less grotesquely.
Oh, no. I mean, as an actor, like as a...
No, I'm with you. I'm saying like I'd rather get my head chopped off with a machete than get turned into a cockroach.
I don't know. For me, it's like the whole I love the whole awake sleep jumps that always happen in these movies, and then dual realities.
All right, let's move forward with some plot here because I know there's not much of it, but we do need to get to the end of the plot eventually.
So one of the kids that Kristen, one of the kids that Kristen pulled into her dream in the first scene, falls asleep and wakes up, and his dog is there with him, and he's like pawing at the ground, and then he pees fire for no reason.
Yeah, and also the dog's name is Jason, which is like
which
just
I liked.
Too cute.
I liked that.
We had simultaneous opposite reactions there.
Yeah,
the dog literally pees fire. Apparently, and this is on the IMDb, so who knows if it's true or not, but apparently James Cameron saw Rennie Harlan, and I guess he had heard that he was directing this movie, and he asked him like real shittily, like, oh, how are they bringing Freddy back this time? And Rennie Harlan was like, a dog pisses fire and it resurrects him from hell. as like a screw you, Jim Cameron, you dipstick. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I would love it to be true.
I would love that to be true. James Cameron needs to, like, a Nancy Kerrigan to the back of the knees.
He just needs to realize he's much less important than he is. That's my number one.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey, I'm going to spend a decade making three Avatar sequels no one could give a half a tenth of a shit about.
Is he really?
Yeah. That's what he's been doing for the last decade since Avatar came out.
No one cared about it when it came out.
I know. I mean, it made a lot of money.
Yeah, but like, if you're not like stepping that game all the way up all these years later, then don't even try.
Yeah, I mean, from like a comparable technological standpoint, from like what 3D was, like that movie better like literally sit next to me in the theater as a projection.
Yeah, I want like 4D.
Yeah, I need smell and touch of vision. So, yeah, the dog pees fire and Jason gets resurrected.
And it's Jason, a really cool...
Wait, sorry. Freddy gets resurrected by a dog named Jason.
Let's just own up to the fact that we will make these slip-ups.
We watch these movies in tight span. We're gonna screw it up a few times. We apologize. All those Freddy heads out there are going to come after us with their glove claws.
It's a really cool... This movie has a lot of cool visuals that, like, beyond, like just the murder things that happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Freddy, his bones kind of all, like, slink back together, and
This is my favorite of the whole thing that you're talking about, the actual reassembly of Freddy part.
It's tied with the end of Freddy at this movie for me.
Okay.
For coolest visualization.
I think they probably did it in reverse, like they melted a thing and then they ran the film backwards. Cause it,
yeah,
like,
just like Raiders, it's sort of like Raiders of the Lost Ark, how they sped up the footage.
Right, right. So the bones are all like scattered and they like reassemble to skeleton size and then they like fuse together and then it starts building body parts. It's sort of like when they show you the credits of Westworld, when they show the creature or the robots being made, it sort of looks like that, but you know, much more low techy.
Is that show good?
This is a hot take, but Ex Machina tells the same type of a story in a fifth of the time, and to me it was way more interesting.
Okay.
Like, it's fine, but, like, the finale could have been the season, this could have been the start of the season, the show probably would have been 10 times more interesting because of that.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. Like, can you imagine if you were a pile of bones, and you were, like, your body reformed, but it still left you, like, burnt and goopy? Like, maybe come on, man.
The your cells were like, hey, that's the best we could do, man. Like, it's what we remembered. We didn't remember your skin unblemished. We're sorry.
Or it's like, contractually, you said you wanted how you looked when you died. So,
like, shitty suck genie. It. Yeah. Like, every episode of the Twilight Zone ever.
Yeah, basically.
The guy who gets trapped there pushes a car on Freddy, which I thought was pretty dope.
Yeah, it was nice. Because these are the kids from Dream Warriors, so they have, like, dream powers.
Right, right. And then all of the cars come alive, and Freddy, like, traps him in the middle of this pit of cars in this junkyard.
Which, it looked like a super fun set to play around on.
Definitely, definitely. And this is honestly, like, one of the creepier Freddy kills that I can recall offhand, because he, like, stabs the guy with a glove, and then he, like, gently caresses his head as, like, the life exits his body. Like, it's really, not that Freddy's not a psycho, but, like, it's a different kind of psycho.
Well, I mean, originally, like in Wes Craven's original idea, Freddy was a child rapist and murderer.
Right.
And then
I think that's canon. He's a child molester.
But they don't talk about it in the first movie.
Right.
Because it, like, wasn't ready. Like, the world couldn't handle that being, a horror movie concept.
Right.
So it's I don't know if it, like, at what point it became, like, oh, that also happened.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was always, like, kind of heavily hinted at. I don't know I don't know when they came out and said it. Certainly in the remake, it's, like, all they talk about.
Oh, in the remake. That garbage remake.
Yeah.
He did. Jackie Earle Haley. Great actor. Great choice. What was that CGI makeup?
So then we cut to the super cool rocker guy in his waterbed with leopard print or tiger print sheets.
I didn't know it was a real waterbed. I thought that was just part of the dream that his bed turned in. Because I've never seen a waterbed that looks like that. Our neighbors had one.
Okay. I had vague recollection, but I didn't remember. It seems to me that it would be deeply unpleasant as a place to sleep.
I don't know, like, I don't think it'd be where I want to sleep all the time, but, like, a one-night kind of a thing.
Yeah, perhaps. It just seems like it wouldn't provide enough stability for me for sleeping. Like, I like a pretty firm mattress.
Probably not, no.
I had a thought, we're sorry for Tangent City again, this movie's just not very good, but I had a thought about, like, the weird little things that we have talked about in this podcast, like, people now know my mattress preference. Like,
yeah.
Like, if you were to compile all of the hours of talking that the two of us have done on this show, and, like, you could make a pretty weird profile of us based on the things that we cop to.
A fairly accurate profile.
I mean, accurate, of course, because I don't make that kind of stuff up, but also just, like, the weirdest minutiae details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually. That is a good point.
So, the guy is like, oh, man.
He looks like Neve Campbell.
Oh, my God, he does. It totally looks like Neve Campbell.
It looks like Neve Campbell in a weird wig.
Yeah, it totally does. Oh, man, I can't believe I didn't think of that. You're totally right.
Yep.
So, like, the hot babe goes from the poster on the wall to, like, in the bed as a mermaid, naked. Like, she gets, like, pushed up against the top of the waterbed, like, all smushed against it, and is, like, kind of coquettishly winking at him and stuff. And he's, like trying to touch her through the waterbed, and then she swims down, and, like, the water's clear, but she goes, like, 2 feet away, and she disappears, and he's like, whoa, where'd the babe go? As, like, I get that, like, if that happened to you, like, the first time you had a dream about a babe in your waterbed, but, like, you are a dream warrior. You know that this is Freddy, right? Like, how would you not instantly know this is Freddy?
Yeah, you should know this by now. Like, get your shit together.
Yeah, like, get off of the bed. And instead, Freddy bursts out and grabs him, and they're, like, both all sloppy and wet and disgusting. And just, like, and he's like, how's this for a wet dream?
I gotta love the puns.
Like, if you're gonna stab me to death with a weird death claw, at least you could be funny when you do it, right? Like, yeah. That's the bare minimum I need.
So his mom finds his body, and that's when we look. Because, okay, when I think of waterbed, I think a mattress shape filled with water. Like, but it looks like a mattress,
right?
If you just look at it. His is like a raised platform with like a clear plastic bubble filled with water.
Yeah, his.
It almost looks like it's supposed to be filled with fish too.
I think that like waterbeds probably needed that outside edge for stability and support, because like the amount of gallons of water you'd need to make a mattress-sized object would be really, really heavy. So I could see this being necessary to like support that much water. But his is like the waist high. Like it's a large pool.
It's a platform basically. Bed.
Yeah, but the water goes all the way down. So it's like a 4 foot high water tank that he's constructed in his room.
I told you, I think it's supposed to have fish in it.
It's like a koi pond and a bed. It's like both.
Yeah, exactly.
Get you a bed that can do both.
Oh, I would like that bed.
Just like casual weird koi pond.
Yeah, it's like a glass bottom boat for sleeping.
Well, there's the quote for this episode.
And somehow he's ended up inside the mattress, drowned.
Which looks really cool, by the way.
Oh, it's amazing. The visuals in this movie are fantastic. But also, like, no one questioned how the fuck that happened?
Yeah, like, how on earth was he able to get into this sealed plastic bubble? Nah, whatever. We gotta take him down to the morgue. Sorry, Ma. Also, think about the logistics, too. The police, or the coroner, rather, would have to, like, drain the bed to get him out of it.
Oh, God. And he's probably super waterlogged.
Yeah, so they have to run a hose out the window, pump the water out the window of this kid's room, or, like, yeah, into the bathtub, I don't know, like, somewhere to drain all this water. It's, like, slowly. This would be, like, this is the most fucked up Freddy kill, I think, because the parents have to, like, go away for half a day so they can do the logistical pulling him out of this waterlogged, pulling his waterlogged carcass out of this bed.
Well, I wonder if that's why it was on a platform like that, because if there was a hole in the mattress, it would just, maybe it's like a basin underneath.
Oh, there's like a drain.
Yeah, so it's like it's the waterbed on slats, so that if there's a hole in it, it just there's like a drainage tub.
In any case, that seems like a lot of work. It does. I don't want it.
Alice goes to school and is freaking out because her friends aren't there because they've been murdered by Freddy. And she somehow, like, knocks herself out by falling into the corner and, like, hitting her head.
Right, right.
And then all of a sudden, it's I'm looking at this nurse, and I was like, this looks kind of like Neil Patrick Harris in, like, shitty day drag. This is weird. And I was like, oh, it's Freddy. It's Freddy. That's why.
This is another, like, we've talked about this with a few movies, in particular Ghostbusters 2, but, like, how does everyone in town forget this shit?
Well, I think that's a plot point of the Nightmare movies.
What do you mean?
The parents wanted all the kids to forget because then Freddy can't kill them.
No, I get that. But, like, at the point where the kids in this movie, who were the kids in the last movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, the kids in this movie who are coming back for more are again dealing with a psycho murderer, and like they start getting killed one by one in horrific, weird ways, and nobody in town seems alarmed that like the weird shit is clearly happening here, people.
Well, I think that it for some reason, because normally I thought that the level of gruesomeness in Dream World translated to the real world, but it doesn't seem to be doing that in this movie. Like when he killed the first kid, he gutted him.
Right.
But then there was no blood on his real body.
Yeah, no, like, and later there's the young girl who gets, like, panic attacked to death, and he, like, yeah, basically just, like, reaches inside her and squeezes her heart, which is fine. Like, again, those things are, like, weird, you know, weird things can happen to people, like, that's fine. But, like, this dude was inside his mattress.
Yeah,
I know.
That
is not physically possible. Like, there's
no logical explanation. I know, that's a weird one.
And so, like, when Alice is like, hey, guys, weird shit is going on. Everyone's like, oh, you just need to sleep. What?
No, what is weird, that no, the thing?
Weird shit is also, like, you're not wrong, but also she's right. So Kristen goes home having not slept. Or Alice, did I fuck that up?
No, Kristen goes home. Alice works at the diner. Okay. And she went from meth head to actually presentable.
Right, right. So Kristen goes home and she, like, eats something in front of her mom, and that and her mom's like, oh, JK, I dosed you with sleeping pills. So she gets dosed with sleeping pills, and this is, like, legitimately awesome director of photography, director, I don't know.
Oh, it's amazing.
She starts feeling the effects of the pills, and so she's getting all woozy, and she's, like, going up the stairs, and the way that they have the camera move makes you feel disoriented as an audience member. It, like, it's following her, and then it flips over her head, and it's in front of her, like, backing up, and then it spins up to the roof, and it starts rotating and moving, and the camera does, like, all these amazing, I would love to see what the rig looked like to do all these camera moves.
I bet it was fantastic to see.
Yeah. So basically the camera is on, like, a roller coaster track so that it can go all over the place, and so she's, like, reeling and spinning and grabbing at stuff and trying to get her phone to call her friends for help because she's about to fall asleep and get, you know, into Freddy's domain. And it's awesome. Like, you feel so uncomfortable as an audience member and so, like, disoriented, exactly as the character feels. It's, like, a really, really awesome moment, and one that, like, other movies should totally be stealing.
Yeah, that was one of the things, like, the best moments I wrote down visually.
Yeah.
And I also thought, like, induced vomiting.
Yeah. Yes.
Just real quick.
Yes. Yeah, stick your finger down your throat real quick, kid. But yeah, it was wild how, like, this movie's, like, fairly ordinary in most respects, and then there's these, like, real cool little flashes that I don't know if it's Rennie Harlan or somebody else on the crew, but, like, whoever is in charge of that, like, major kudos to you. It is a really dope camera move.
Yeah, good work.
So she dreams that she's on a beach. Which is like, she's like falling asleep, muttering herself, being like, it's pleasant dreams, pleasant dreams, pleasant dreams. And so she wakes up on a beach and is like, yes, nailed it. And then Freddy pops up in the sand. And
no, because we see a fin and it looks like.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
It's this like spiny looking fin, like something on a lionfish. And then it gets closer and closer and it's Freddy's claw hand. They turned into a fin and it was just like the coolest visual.
Yeah, like, it's just really great.
A lot of cool work. Like, randomly, this movie got a lot of cool work in it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is, like, I really like taking Freddy and putting him on a beach because that's the last place I would expect to see Freddy Krueger.
Oh, yeah. Especially in a sweater.
Yeah. But even if you had him, like, in board shorts, like, it would be cool. Like, it's dope. Like, I like seeing these characters get put in places where I've never seen them before. That's why, like, we talked before. To me, the ultimate Friday the 13th sequel, like the most, like the fact that they're making a new one and it's not this, winter at Camp Crystal Lake, Freddy or Jason in the snow, like that's such a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, that does feel like it would be like the Winter Rising crew.
It doesn't even have to be that. It could just be like a bunch of kids sneak up there, like kids who are former counselors sneak up there, or kids who are counselors sneak up there to go have a party because they know nobody's there.
Okay, yeah.
They're all home on winter break from college, and they're like, hey, you know what would be cool? We can have a party at Crystal Lake. And they all go up there, and they get, like, snow murdered. Like, come on! Think of the possibilities!
I know. Snow murder's a pretty good one.
You know, someone gets killed with a ski or a ski pole. Some dude gets frozen to death. You know, a bunch of people get thrown through the frozen lake. Come on!
Oh, that'd be a good one.
Yeah, like, this writes itself.
Or so, they get stuck on a ski lift.
That's actually a really good movie. It already exists.
Oh, it is. Frozen. It is. That yeah. is. I yeah. forgot about that one. Is it called really Frozen?
It. Yes. It came out before the animated movie that made all the dollars. So it will forever be shunned. But yes. So she gets like buried. He pushes her down in the sand and then like puts his foot on top of her head and just like pushes her completely under. She like gets stuck in quicksand and then he just drowns her in it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And then she like kind of pulls Alice into her dream, but it's real muddy.
Yeah. It is. The logic starts to get real thin at the point where Alice gets tagged in. Because, like, there's a postcard that says greetings from hell, and it looks like a boardwalk scene with Freddy and Kristen in it.
Yeah.
That Alice, like, sees.
It's in her room. It's on her. Because there's a plot point that her mirror is covered in pictures, and it's a really cool symbolism, I think.
Right.
And she pulls it off the mirror and is like, what is this? And then it catches fire. Also, yeah. What did Kristen say when she died?
I didn't catch it.
It sounds like she says, "You leave my powers," and then the spirit, her like spirit orb, goes into Freddy for a hot second, and then jumps into Alice, and Alice wakes up.
You need my powers, maybe?
Oh, maybe it's that. I was just like, what is she saying?
So we kind of touched on this lately. We should explain it a little better. Each of these former Dream Warriors have like a weird dream power, yes. And as they're dying, Alice is gaining their power. So like,
kind of a cool thing. It's interesting.
But so like, you know, Alice can suddenly do whatever Kristen's power was that I'm not entirely sure was supposed to be represented by
was
anything.
It was pull people into the dreams.
Oh, okay. So now Alice has the tagging in. Okay.
Except she has literally no control over it.
She doesn't really have control over any of them.
That's true.
So we jump to a math test, and do you remember this character's name? She was in the movie for like 10 seconds.
Sheila. Because I liked her. I didn't want her to die.
Yeah, I was bummed too. Sheila has asthma, and she goes to take her math test, and the math test starts like rearranging and like spelling out stuff, which I thought was really, really cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
And then Freddy pops up and is like, "Wanna suck face?" And then he like puts his mouth over hers and sucks all of her out. It looks like Roger Rabbit.
It does. It's creepy.
the like death in Roger Rabbit where he sucks their essence out. So she like turns into this like dried out husk of a human that he just drops like a wet bag on the floor. Like an empty bag of soup, I guess.
Well, a bag that once held soup.
It's just the bag now, though.
And so,
I don't know. I kind of like. It was just a weird thing. I liked it.
It's weird and cool, but I liked that character. I really didn't want her to die. But I also, it was kind of like, I was like, what teacher isn't going to wake up a star student if they fell asleep during a test?
Yeah, that's weird to me, too. Like, nobody seems to notice this stuff. And then she doesn't
like, I understand teachers aren't going to wake up every kid, but, like, Sheila is, like, clearly the star student of the class. Like,
right, she has glasses on. She's clearly a nerd. Like, I get what we're doing.
She builds stuff.
Yeah. But the other thing, too, is she doesn't seem to be asleep because she, like, jerks awake or whatever and is like flailing for her inhaler.
And I think, and then she dies right after that.
Right, right.
And I think that's my biggest complaint is that I wish there was a little more consistency of what counts as, like, it's sometimes muddy in, like, I understand getting muddy if you're like, oh, who knows where we are right now. But, like, there's also times where it's like, I genuinely am just confused. And not in an enjoyable, like, going on a movie adventure way.
Right, right.
It's sometimes, yeah. It's just like, well, we need a little more consistency so that you can play with those rules and make me, whoa, what's happening?
Right, you have to have rules so that you can break them. Like, otherwise you don't know what the hell you're doing.
Exactly.
So we find out that Freddy needs someone to bring him to, like, he needs people to be brought to him basically so that he can do yes. this stuff. And so that now that he's picking off this crew one by one, it's dwindling the amount of people he's able to get, and so he needs Alice to bring people to him
because Alice keeps accidentally bringing people in.
Yeah, because she doesn't have control over her power. She just keeps tagging people into the thing. And so Karate Man goes into the bathroom with like 100 cheerleaders.
Yeah, it's weird.
And it's like, what, again, don't you know that this is bad? Like, aren't you aware that you are not the kind of guy who gets 100 cheerleaders after him simultaneously?
Yeah, like, come on, Ralph Macchio. Calm down.
Yeah, like, crane kick your way into some logic for once and get it together. Like, get it together, people. That's my piece of advice for all of the Dream Warriors.
That's your note?
Get it together. Yeah. Because, like, come on, you fought Freddy before, you know that this is a dream. Like, this is stupid. I hate dumb characters, even in movies where they're just there to be murdered.
Yeah, when they're just murder fodder.
They get into an elevator.
He, all of a sudden, the bathroom stall turns into an elevator.
Yeah.
But this is also happening concurrently with his sister, Alice, learning about, like, dream science / mythology?
Yeah, it's one, like, of those, like, movie scenes where it's like someone flips through a book quickly and learns all they need to know to solve the problem.
Yeah, and I thought it was setting something up cooler than it actually was. Like, I was expecting the Dream Master to actually be a character who, like,
yeah.
shows up.
Yeah, that like, or that, like, the Dream Master is, like, the ancient opposing force to Freddy sort of thing.
Yes, exactly.
They like harness his power or its power. Yeah, that would have been pretty dope.
So I'll say it now. I have it later, but I'll just say it now. My rewrite of this movie.
Okay.
Because Alice needs to, like, Freddy can't get people because no one knows about Freddy. So she is like pulling people into the dreams unknowingly because she doesn't understand anything and doesn't have the power over it. But I think it would be a cool movie if she figured it out and was like, he pulled her in a dream and was like threatening her. And she was like, you're not going to kill me because without me, who else are you going to kill? So back up. Let's work together.
Oh, like she takes Freddy on like she wants his powers?
Not necessarily wants his powers, but is like, look, don't kill me. And I will find people. I will bring people to you and you won't hurt my friends.
Can I pitch the shitty version of that?
Yes.
Freddy makes her make a viral video.
Oh my god. So like the new Ring movie?
Uh-huh.
Oh god.
he like gives her a script and is like, bring me all the souls, and she like has to become a YouTube star. And
oh my
so
god.
she's like one of those YouTubers that like puts up a camera and talks into it like a vlogger.
Yeah.
And so like she gets like more and more fame and fortune and like all these adoring fans, and she just like is feeding them the pipeline to Freddy. she gets famous as like a meditation enthusiast and
like ASMR.
Yeah. But like her ASMR is actually weaving Freddy into people's subconscious.
Oh, I like that idea actually.
And so she's like, you know, like she's like doing those Tibetan singing bowls, but it's like one, two, and she does the Freddy song, but like in really slow versions, and people just like have it in their brains then.
I like that.
That's my shitty movie boss. Like the head of some studio is going to listen to that and greenlight it for $1 billion.
He will. I still like my version though. We're like,
yours is actually clever. Mine is dumb. I feel like mine is more likely to get greenlit.
Probably.
I think that'd be cool. Like, I'm always down with something weird with these. I think a team up would be really rad.
Especially if it's like the nerdy kid and like, or the Alice character, like the mousy, unassuming one who's like, oh no, I figured this shit out. So
right.
I'm gonna tell you who to kill, and you're gonna shut up about it.
Yeah. Like a weird Teen Witch Freddy crossover.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We're also not gonna skip over the karate fight because it's like probably my favorite fight part of the movie, where Karate Boy is like delivering super high kicks and sweet chin music to Freddy, and like, you know, he gets a couple of good licks in, and then
Freddy's invisible, by the way, we should mention.
Yes, that is important.
So he's fighting the air.
I wonder if that was like Robert Englund like put it in his contract. He's like, no more stunt fights, like I'm done with that.
Oh, that might have been, but this is the fourth movie. He probably was like, no. I'm tired of being rigged up. I'm tired of flying.
I got to put the makeup on, and then I got to sweat in it. Like, no, I'm not doing another fucking karate fight. You're not doing it. Like, well, this is kind of important. This character knows karate. Well, then he can fight Invisible Freddy. I don't care. I'm going to my trailer.
He did get to eat in his makeup, which I thought was kind of cool.
I mean, you kind of have to.
No, but I mean, like, normally, like, they don't, like, it was cool that I was like, oh, they actually let him have, like, eat something real in that full gross makeup.
Yeah. Just having a turkey sandwich.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's fighting the air, and then he kicks Freddy's glove off, and then Freddy, like, he thinks he's got one over on Freddy and does, like, a little half gloat, and Freddy just kind of, like, shrugs. It reminds me of the Indiana Jones where, like, the guy does all the swords and he just shoots him.
Yeah.
Freddy just, like, looks at his glove and looks at the kid, and it just, like, shoomp and stabs him.
Oh, it's great.
Flies off the floor.
And once again, we get some, like, amazing movie funeral fashions.
Okay, but here's the problem. The eulogist for Rick is reading the eulogy like this. Rick was a passionate young man who had many interests and hobbies that enriched his life. And people are like sobbing and weeping. Like,
it sounds like any other Catholic funeral.
It's like I think the guy ate all of the Xanaxes. Like the least impassioned.
That's what I only remember one Catholic. It was a Catholic funeral, and the guy walked up to eulogize was like, I literally didn't know this man, but I'm a priest.
All so, I'm saying is my funeral better be like a party, okay?
Oh, yeah. No, write none that of this. Down. None like, of this garbage.
Like, tell dumb stories of my general stupidity and whimsy. I don't want somebody up there droning on it one word per hour. Like, just get it up there. Get it happening. That's a note for everybody. But because he dies, Alice learns how to nunchuck, and it is amazing.
It's great. I want to know how many times she hit herself with nunchucks.
Oh, 1,000. Because she does that, like, I'm in a trance and moving thing, and it's like whip, 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 the nunchucks. And, like, you know the actress is just covered in bruises from all the practice.
She has to be.
Absolutely. One, nunchucks are really hard. And two, I can't think of a less efficient weapon.
I'm sure it's more for, like, the visual, the show, than it is practicality.
Yeah, because, right? Like, I mean, someone's going to tweet at us and show us a video of a guy with a nunchuck, like, splitting a watermelon in half. But, like, you'll never convince me that, like, a bow, just like a stick, a bow staff is less effective than two small sticks chained together. Like, it just seems way more, if the threshold to using it effectively is as high as it is, it's a stupid weapon.
What do you mean the threshold? Like, do you have the level of mastery?
Yeah, like, that you have to spend 40 hours to be good with it? Like, why on earth would the point of a weapon is to just do damage quickly? Just, like, pick up a stick and hit people with it.
It's the same for me with whips. Like, Catwoman uses a whip because no one knows how to use one, so if it gets taken from her in a fight, they can't use it against her.
Sure, but, like, also, just get a gun.
She uses those sometimes.
I know, but, like, it just seems to be not the most effective use that you could have of your time. I'm going to spend 100 hours learning how to nunchuck so that if somebody takes them from me in a fight, they won't be able to nunchuck against me. Also, the karate head's so mad right now. So they go to the theater and Reefer Madness is playing.
And so is the original Hairspray. It's a real weird double feature.
If you'd like to see Reefer Madness and you're in the Philadelphia area,
you can come see Reefer Madness the Musical at Players Club of Swarthmore. I'm playing Jimmy, who was played by Christian Campbell in the movie. You'll see my butt.
And also, he smokes a lot of fake weed.
I smoke so much in this show. It's insane.
Andrew's going to have to get, like, a lung detox for after this play is over. Yeah, so she gets sucked into the movie, which I kind of dig.
This is another moment where I wish the line between dream and reality was clearer, because I thought the dream, like, she climbs out of her bedroom window and goes to the movie theater, and so it looks originally like, oh, she's asleep at home and this is all a dream, but then when she gets sucked into the movie, you can see her sleeping body still out in the movie theater.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I guess she wasn't dreaming the whole time.
Yeah, but then there's
he wakes her up, yeah, and she's in her bed.
Yeah, yeah. There's like a weird Inception layer dream thing happening at this point of the movie. And then there's shortly, we'll get to it in a second with more detail, but there's that, like, looping thing that's weird too.
Very, like, never been established as a thing.
Right, right. So she goes into the movie, she goes to her place of business, and I don't know if you noticed, but the name of the restaurant where Alice works is the Crave Inn.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. That's clever.
You are giving a lot more credit to the puns and dumb references in this.
I said that
with much derision. Just like
I
the
think
dog
the Crave Inn
Jason.
Is cute. I think it's fun.
Alright, well, Wes Craven directed the first one of these, in case you didn't know that. Rest in peace, buddy.
Did a lot of great stuff. Well, some questionable stuff, but a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then we get, like, another great gross thing in that Freddy's like, what a pizza, and he opens it, and all of it are little meatballs that are the heads of her friends that are like, no, don't eat us! Ah!
And he stabs her brother's head.
And pulls it out, like, and like it's a full-size meatball, and then crunches it in front of her. It's really fucked up.
Yeah.
And then so
he goes after her friend. The doors of the Crave Inn open, like, fly open.
Right.
And he sees her friend working out and, I guess, asleep. Like, working out. Which seems like the best version of sleepwalking.
Sleep benching. Also,
oh, my God. I wish. Like, I wish I would wake up and be like, oh, my arms are sore. I guess I did, like, a lot of reps last night.
1,000 push-ups in my sleep.
Yeah, right?
I am bothered, though, like, we gave a bunch of credit to the director, so here's the flip of that, it's really disgusting camera angles of this actress benching. Like, it is right on her nipples for, like, most of it.
There were a lot of nipples in the 80s, though.
But it's, like, super lecherous directing. Like, it's like, yeah, we're gonna bring the camera in right here on your chest while you're benching.
Well, they were probably still recovering from the gay second one.
I mean, I guess.
They were just like, make it as straight as possible.
Well, what they don't make straight are her elbows, which they pop out of her arms by crunching them down the wrong way. Freddie just, like, pushes the weight down as hard as he can on her chest, and her elbows just explode, and it is disgusting.
It is real, real gross.
It gave me a legit shiver. Like, I did, like a heebie-jeebie shiver.
I think this is the Nightmare movie that I knew the most deaths from before I went into it. Because I've seen a bunch of top 10 Freddy kills lists or whatever.
Oh, right.
The Roach Motel, the sucking her life out of her breath, and I think Karate are on that list.
Oh, really? Okay. Karate too?
I think so.
Interesting. She slowly starts to turn into a cockroach. It's a real metamorphosis.
Do you need to clear your throat for some Kafka?
The look of derision you gave me just then was amazing. I wish sometimes this was a visual podcast because our microphones cover the lower halves of our faces, so it's really just eyes that we can see. And when I said that, Andrew went from looking at his notes to looking down the barrel of the camera with just like all the hatred in his heart.
Get another cup of Kafka.
So yeah, she turns into a cockroach. It's pretty cool. And then we find out that she is inside a Roach Motel, which Freddy picks up and just like crunches it in hand, and all the goop runs out of it.
It's gross. I don't like bugs.
I don't super like them either. But this is where that time loop comes in that we had touched on before. Alice is trying to save Debbie, and she keeps like running out of the restaurant and meeting up with
Dan.
I was going to say Derek, so I was at least close. She's meeting up with Dan.
You knew Debbie, though?
Yeah, I wrote down Debbie. The female characters had a lot more personality in this, I feel like, than the male
they
ones,
do.
So it was easier
Which
to remember.
Which I think would be a very interesting thing, like point to discuss of like the weird sexism / like overshooting of sexism, like combating sexism in like lady characters in horror movies.
Meaning like?
Like the final girl, like it's a sex, is it a sexist trope, or is it also like female empowerment at the same time? Like, is it a weird middle ground?
Yeah, I mean, I would say like before the current era of movies where people gave a shit about stuff like that, you saw a lot more powerful female characters in horror movies than any other genres of movie put together.
I would think so.
I mean, there are more like badass female heroes in science fiction and horror than any other genre, and it's not close.
Oh yeah,
I mean Ripley or Jamie Lee Curtis slasher movie. Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis. Like, I mean, their characters are often like weak who become strong, so it's kind of a boring narrative from that perspective. But like, yeah, I mean, that Alice is kind of a badass. She
and then
stands
we
up
had
to Freddy Krueger. I mean, that's a pretty badass move.
I think so. And then we had that other the girl in Chopping Mall.
Yeah, yeah, she's
who
a
was just like a huge badass, and no one knows about her character.
Right, right. Yeah, we talked about a little bit of that on our Chopping Mall episode if you want to hear more. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I would say that's 100% correct. Like, horror movies have always had badass female characters, like strong, kick-ass female characters more than any other genre movie. Even before like our much more modern, hey, we should pay attention to representation in our movies because that stuff matters. And it does, and it's great that other movies are catching on now. It's awesome that there are Star Wars movies built around strong female leads and not just like Princess Leia, who is kick-ass, but is like kind of an afterthought to a lot of the action in those movies.
Yeah, well, she's the only lady character other than Mon Mothmall.
is that the one from that meeting?
Yes,
and then Amperu.
Amperu.
Like, I literally think that's it for the original.
I mean, there's some like there's the slave dancers in Jawa's palace, but like
right. But like,
I don't know if they
count
as fully on characters.
Yeah, I'm not sure you can call them a character if we don't know their name other than slave dancer in Jawa's palace. Like, not sure that counts.
Yeah,
someone's gonna chime in on Twitter and be like, actually, the whole
in the extended universe,
the Cantina band is all female. I don't know if you know that,
or their agender,
right? But yeah, not to say that Princess Leia isn't a total badass. Rest in peace, Carrie Fisher. She is, but it's like, I think it's cool that movies are doing that now, but it's you're right. It's interesting that like way before that wave of people being aware of shit like that, that there was always that trend in horror movies. That is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so there's a time loop here where she keeps running over to Dan and is like, we've got to save Debbie. I'll drive. And then like they get in the car and drive, and she drives and like teleports back to her running and is like, we got to go save Debbie. I'll drive. And then like the third or fourth time through, he's like, repeats the line back to her.
And she's like, what? And he's like, I think we've done this before.
So they finally, I guess, acknowledging that they're in a loop, is able to change that because...
Or Freddy, I think, once Freddy killed Debbie, he had no need to keep them away anymore.
Oh, I guess that's true.
But also, like, I guess if they're in Dream World, they could have fought him and tried to save her, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. But what they do instead is hit him real hard with a truck.
And they actually hit a tree. So I guess they were sleep driving? Which goes to the other end of the spectrum of the worst thing you can do while sleeping.
Which is a real thing that happens when people take certain sleeping pills.
Really?
Yeah, it's one of the side effects of... shit. Oh, man.
Ambien?
Yeah, yeah. One of the side effects of... I might be wrong about the Ambien part, but I'm almost positive it is. One of the side effects is sleep driving.
That's horrifying.
Or, like, just sleep doing anything, but, like, more than just sleepwalking. The people, like, get in their car and stuff. Yeah, it is pretty fucked up. And that brings us to one of our recurring segments on this show. Boy, look how sweaty that actor is.
I know.
Because the paramedic in this is, like...
dripping.
Just disgusting dripping. Like, me after any level of athletic activity, but... I'm not in a movie, so it's fine.
This also was part of the, again, lack of consistency, because there's a creepy green light coming from the inside of the ambulance when they push
it
in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's Freddy. No, it's not at all. It's just, it's real life.
Yeah,
there's just a green light in this ambulance.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But yeah, it's like, I wonder how that's a thing. Like, at what point in cinema did people start being like, you can't have everybody be sweaty? Like, unless it's a workout scene, they're not allowed to be sweaty. Because people, like, when's the last time you saw an actor or actress in a movie sweaty outside of the context of, like, working out?
Oh, not at all.
Or sports.
You aren't allowed
stuff.
To be sweaty.
Right. So, like, I wonder when that happened. Like, I'm sure that we could find, like, there's a year somewhere in this research that could be found that, like, there's a point
you
at
know,
which that's...
You know it was the 80s when they made that decision.
Yeah, I mean, it was late 80s, early 90s, because we've seen it in so many movies. Like, we just stopped allowing sweaty people. This paramedic is disgusting. I'm sorry to belabor sweat for 2 minutes of a podcast, but it's so weird. Like, it's
he's
such
gross.
A weird thing to me. So they wheel Dan into surgery, and he's like, don't put me under, don't put me under. And then we, like, at the same time, there's, like, a gearing up montage where Alice is, like, putting on all of her friend's clothes. Like
I'm like, you are just a weird hoarder. Like, you're a little bit of a thief, a little bit of a hoarder.
Well, that's the thing is, like, did she collect this stuff while they were alive or after they died?
Well, the one thing she got, Debbie gave her something while she was alive.
Right.
Her brother she got after he died.
Right.
And then she picked up, what's-her-face, Sheila's machine after Sheila died. It, like, fell out of her backpack.
Right, right. She's got Sheila's machine, and then all of the studded leather belts that exist in the whole universe, I think. She's, like, wrapping them around her ankles. She's got them around her waist. She's putting them around her wrist. Like, everything that could be studded with a leather belt is studded with a leather belt.
And then she wraps... I wanted her to put on her brother's Ralph Macchio headband as a headband.
Yeah, me too.
But she wrapped it around her hand like she's about to break some glass.
Yeah, yeah, but it's just all belts everything.
So then she like looks into her mirror, and finally her mirror is clear, and she can see herself and also Freddy, who's like just about to attack Dan, and she kick dives? Like she judo kicks,
like flies through the mirror.
It's crazy.
Like if you close, don't do this while you're driving if you're listening to this on the road, but like if you close your eyes and picture flying kick where like one leg is out and the other one's tucked up and bent underneath and sort of like a four, that's exactly what she looks like, except she goes straight through her mirror.
And then she and Dan are running and Freddy pushes them out a window, and all of a sudden Dan's like, oh, I'm hemorrhaging. They're pulling me out of my coma. Bye.
He Back to the Future's out of the dream.
I was like, why even put him there? He was there for 5 seconds.
Yeah, what was the point of that from a writing standpoint? Like, I guess to give her somewhere to go, but like...
Well, it should have been she sees that she sees Freddy attacking him, jumps through the mirror, and he's gone, and he was never there.
Yeah, like they faked
That's
him
what
out.
It should have been. Yeah. Because he didn't have to be there. He was literally there for 5 seconds.
Right. And so there's like a fight that is just all jump and judo kicks. Like, it's all jump kicks. It's like watching somebody who's really bad at Street Fighter.
Yeah, she's like kickboxing, essentially.
She's like, jump kick, jump kick, jump kick, up and over with the stick, up and over, up and over. It's really ridiculous.
B-A-B-A-B-A-B-A.
Well, meanwhile, Freddy's just crouching in the corner, punching up at the sky. Like, it's it's the worst Street Fighter matchup you've ever seen.
It is.
And this is where we learn that, like, what we already mentioned in the show, but, like, she has absorbed everybody's various dream power.
Because, sure.
Yeah. And so Freddy got their souls, and she got the power.
I don't know what the difference is.
Right. I don't know how those things are able to be separated, but I guess they are. And they have a pretty entertaining fight. Like, he kind of at one point, like, kind of caber tosses her and hucks her into the wall, and then she kips up, like, does that flip to a standing up thing. There's a lot of high kicks and judo kicking into the head. A lot
very
of kicks
Buffy.
To the head. It is very, very Buffy, yes. And definitely some pro wrestling in there, too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then this machine that Sheila had, which I'm sure was explained in Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3. But
no, it was explained in Part 4 because Sheila wasn't in 3.
Okay, because I don't know what this machine does. Did I just miss it?
She said, I think she said, it's our friend is afraid of dogs or bugs, so this high-pitched machine keeps them away.
Okay.
And then it turned into being like a weird Ghostbusters trap.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Good job. Yes, it definitely was. Kind of zaps Freddy with it? Question mark.
It burns a hole in his stomach,
and then it immediately just like T-1000's back shut because it's a dream. So why would it matter?
Mm-hmm.
But it like somehow doing that did something to the people inside to give them some power because like Freddy starts turning into like a weird gremlin creature where like these
She shows him his reflection.
Oh, so the gizmo didn't have anything to do with that?
No.
Oh, see, I thought those two things were linked.
No. Okay. She's down for the count, and she's like, oh, no, he's going to hurt me. And then the little kids are singing the nursery rhyme, but it's not the Freddy Krueger one. It's the one she, like, couldn't remember throughout this whole movie about the Dream Master.
Okay.
She literally,
so
six times, is like, I remember this little nursery rhyme about the Dream Master. I don't know what the actual words were, though. And then all of a sudden...
it is a pre-Google world, so it's not as if she could just, like, look that up.
It is. And then all of a sudden the little kids start singing it, and she's like, oh, that's what it is. And I'm like, should the audience know that, too?
Like, are we supposed to be familiar with this song, or is it just, like, made up for the movie? Like, that's fine, but I'm mostly confused here.
And then she shows him his reflection, and this is what I thought was equally as cool to Freddy coming back together, was all of the people... It's like there's a thin, like, sheer latexy sheet, and all of these people are, like, pressing their face into it through his stomach.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing all of the people he's killed, and it's this really cool visual of them, like, straining against his skin to get out from underneath and, like, holding him back so he can get killed.
And then their, like, tiny little baby arms start sprouting out of them all over the place.
Yeah, it's weird.
And they're, like, all punching and clawing at him. It's a very strange thing. Tackled into a wall and like does a Wicked Witch of the West meltdown thing.
Mm-hmm. They like rip his jaw open and then he dies.
Yeah. So we flash forward to like bright sunny day with a wishing well and she like throws a coin in it and sees a reflection of Freddy.
For like a hot second.
Yep. And they're like, are you okay? She's like, yep, everything's fine. And then you know, Delamitri comes in.
I was gonna say it's she walks away with Dan, her boyfriend now.
Look around the world. Yeah, so that's it. That's Nightmare on Elm Street 4. Final thoughts?
I enjoy it. It's not the best of the Freddy movies, like we said. Obviously, our favorite is the meta one that I think is like 9 or something. But it's solid. I enjoy it. The cool visuals outweigh the nonsense, I think.
Yeah, see, I think it's, like, really, really... I mean, I agree with you there are some cool parts of this, for sure, but I think this feels, like, really slapdash to me. Like, it really feels rushed and quick, and, like, obviously the writing is never going to be all that good in a Freddy Krueger movie, but it's kind of worse than average to me. And the other thing that drives me crazy, too, is, like, how trendy this feels. Like, and I'll put a clip of this in at the end, but like, there's a rap song with Freddy Krueger over the opening the closing credits.
Oh, I didn't watch the closing credits.
Yeah, like there's a I had it on. I actually put the DVD in because I own this movie.
I didn't know you owned this movie.
I own all 8 Freddy movies because I was at a Goodwill in Frederick a few years ago, and they were $3.33 a piece for the 4-packs, and so I was able to buy all 8 movies for $6.66, and I just really wanted that receipt.
That is a good one.
But yeah, so I own all of the Freddy movies, even though I'm not the biggest Nightmare on Elm Street fan on earth. But yeah, they like, there's a rap song with Freddy Krueger in it over the credits.
That is weird.
It's like, I don't need Freddy Krueger rapping. Like, that is not a thing that I ever felt like was a thing that I needed in my life. So yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. But yeah, it feels like kind of faux trendy and slapdash. And there are way better Nightmare on Elm Street movies that you should watch if you're going to go that way. Not that any of these, I think, are like good from a movie standpoint, but they're certainly yes, entertaining. So you would recommend this then?
I would.
Okay.
I would.
Yeah, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to say this is not where I would spend my time if I was going to hang out with Nightmare on Elm Street. I think there's way better ways to do it. I like the one that's meta a lot. The first one's pretty fun. Yeah.
Nancy, I think, is just a great character.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Alice is fine, but not anything like otherworldly exception.
Because like, I will always remember Nancy like Home Alone booby trapping her house.
Yeah,
in Dream World.
Yeah.
Like, it's just she's just a badass.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm a big fan too. So that about wraps it up. Before we let you go, a couple of quick things. Don't forget to vote for us in the Monkeys Fighting Robots competition. It's dissectingthe80s.com/vote. It's probably more important than ever that you donate any extra money or time you have to organizations that need your help. There are many of them that are going to need it even more in the next 4 years. We'd like to thank you for doing that. So if you donate to Planned Parenthood or any other women's rights organization, we'll give you our Dirty Dancing episode. If you donate to any LGBTQ+ organization, we will give you our Top Gun Live episode. Both of those are, I'm not bullshitting you, among my favorite episodes of this show. They're both really good. You find more details at dissectingthe80s.com/donate. Go to dissectingthe80s.com for anything you want to know about us. On social media, it's facebook.com/dissectingthe80s, instagram.com/dissectingthe80s, and on Twitter, we are at dissectomania. You can also, no one's done it yet, but you can also call us at 856-DISSECT. That's right, 856-DISSECT, and leave us a voicemail and tell us, I don't know, anything you want to tell us, really, make a suggestion for an episode or what have you. If you do that, we will probably play that on the air. Last but certainly not least, please, 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 please rate and review this show wherever you get it, iTunes, Stitcher, what have you. We would greatly appreciate it, and we will read them on the air. We really appreciate you guys taking the time to do that. It only takes about a minute, so please review our show. Got one of those I'd like to read to you by Scoop Alo Honey, Back to the Future of Podcasting. These two hilarious fellows engage the millions of millennials to remember their posh childhoods through film. Thank you very much for the review. We greatly appreciate it. If you want to hear yours, all you got to do is rate and review the show. From the corrections department, Joan Cusack is in Say Anything, but John and Joan only acted in 10 things together thus far. They've each been in 80 or so projects. 10 of them overlapped. So that is from the corrections department. Why don't you tell the people what's next?
Next is Friday the 13th, part 4. I don't know what the subtitle is.
The final chapter.
The final chapter. That's really adorable.
They were off by like 10 or so. Give
just
or take.
10?
Yeah.
A subtle 10.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you guys so much for listening. We really appreciate it. I have been Trip Leno.
And I will always be Andrew Leno.
Until next time.
Don't you forget about me.
Dissecting the 80s is a Chum Some of This production.
The things we're going to cut out in editing.
We got to go back. We got to go dissect the 80s. It's your part 4 slashers. Something's got to be done about your part 4 slashers.
That wasn't even in the ballpark.
No, that might be among the worst ones. You want to go again? Are you good?
What was wrong about it? Was it pitch?
It was just like the wrong. Yeah, it was like it felt like it was the wrong level. Like you weren't down Bernie Sanders level enough.
Okay.
Okay. Where you were like, hoo, 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 down there. You poor bastard.
I don't open a show in 4 days or anything.
Are you saying it's really bad that we should just do trash your voice episode? Can we do this? Can you do this whole episode in demon voice?
Oh my god, no.
So then they go.
That's Batman. That was a Batman voice.
That was Batman. Yeah, yeah. Carol or whatever her name is.
That was it.
You got the time. Listen to this. You'll bust the rhyme.
Fred Krueger the myth. Well, Fred Krueger the man. It doesn't matter because I'm still rapping by the money stand. So sit back, Jack. I'm going to bust the rhyme. Grab a hole in your face. It's Krueger time.
It's time for Fred. See, I'm a popular guy. If you don't know yet, you're going to find out why.
Big fuck. Please put no street late one night. I look like I go
tired and ready for bed. Don't fall asleep or you'll wake up dead.